Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. I'm Alex, and with me is James. Check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. We've most recently talked about The Nice Guys, and before that we talked about the 1982 Sidney Lumet film, The Verdict. And previous to that was I'm Not There, Galaxy Quest, and American Crime Story, The People versus O.J. Simpson. I also wrote a pretty short thing about Money Monster, because Money Monster... one of the good things about Money Monster is that it's short, so I figured I'd play along with that. But yeah, themacguffinmen.com. Follow us on Twitter if you like, at themacguffinmen. Tell your friends, tell everybody, tell President Obama, get him to subscribe. Theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
James.
Uh-huh.
Here we are. Podcasting again.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we doing?
The listeners out there for borderline pedophilia.
Yeah, this is the podcast for you. I'm finally getting around to some gross French shit.
Yeah, we're talking about Leon the Professional?
Yeah, I'm probably just going to call it The Professional, just because it was that for so long in my head. Even though I know that the director would prefer to be called Leo.
Right. So. Okay.
But also the director married a 16-year-old, so what am I...
speaking of real pedophilia,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
This movie I had not seen until very recently and was kind of just one on
true?
My list to see. Yeah, 100%.
Oh, okay.
I put that on the list of movies to podcast about because I just heard a lot about it and... I remember the cover being in the video store by my house when I was very young. And yeah, just had always kind of intended to come around to watching it, and now I got to.
So one quick question. Does it make Speed look like a slow ride to Grandma's house?
Oh, is that the review on the front?
That is the review on the front of The Professional.
I give it two enthusiastic thumbs up, if that matters for anything. Which is from
That's
the Speed
probably
cover.
The other one.
Wait, was the question was, does it make it look like a slow ride?
The comment was this movie makes Speed look like a slow ride to Grandma's house.
Okay, well, to take that question somewhat seriously.
Yeah. That's what we're here for, not serious nonsense.
That's right. I'd say there's about really only four action sequences in this movie.
Yeah.
They really go for it for most of them, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, I very much enjoyed the first action sequence where, you know, it's right at the beginning when he's got to hunt down that fat fuck getting in on someone's territory. Yeah. I thought that was a really fun action sequence. And then, I mean, Matilda's family being shot down is less fun.
Yeah, it's less fun. It's still a good sequence, though.
Yeah, it's a good sequence. And then... I think this is my first hitman training montage like that I can remember, as they go around cutting chains and killing people.
Okay, so yeah, so you watched the extended version then?
Yes, I am aware that I did see the extended version. I've been reading a bit about the differences, and from what I gather, it seems like I like the extended edition more.
Yes, I watched both, and you know, I'd seen both before, but not in like 10 years. But the extended version is the better version because. It just kind of works better. It flows better. The quote unquote ring trick that he uses at the end on Gary Oldman, that setup isn't in the movie. If you don't watch the extended version, it's just like, oh, he's got grenades, I guess, you know, like, so it pays off better.
I read that. That seemed very surprising to me. That seems like such a classic setup, final moment payoff kind of thing. So yeah.
it still works because we just know that, it's an action movie. He might have grenades strapped to him, you know, like this is just how these things work. So it's not like, cause again, I watched it, the shorter version first, it was showing at TIFF and, I certainly wasn't lost without it being set up, but I wasn't like, where are the grenades or where do you get the grenades? You know? But yeah, it just flows better to me in the longer, version. And I really like the scene where he takes Matilda to kill that guy. I wouldn't even know what to call him. No.
I think that's his voice.
Oh, is it? Like, I'm talking to the little scruffy guy that has played a New York thug in, like, a million action movies with all the tattoos.
She practices shooting him?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's not in the original?
No.
Oh, I like that a lot.
Yeah, no, that scene's great.
Yeah, his confusion is very entertaining.
Yeah, no, and I really like that actor for all of the, like, very small roles he's had in his career. Like, I think he's had his arm broken by Steven Seagal in, like, four different movies. one of which is definitely Hard to Kill. I don't remember any of the other three. But, yeah, he's really good, and I don't know why he never got to play anybody that's in a movie for more than one scene. But
right.
He's just a fun, charismatic actor.
Yeah, there's a couple 90s action faces in the crews in this movie, I found.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, to go back to the action, and then that last sequence, I mean, that's where it all is.
Yeah.
That's where that review comes from, is that absolutely insane scene. And I will say, in general, I did enjoy watching this movie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The lack of realism in that scene is not out of place in an absolute bonkers movie like Leon the Professional.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
This is some all-time great police work going on in here.
Oh, police work that makes no sense. The Gary Oldman's office, the setup of that building makes no sense. Like
passing something around a metal detector.
Yeah.
And the cop is going, food.
And like, exactly. Not even looking in the bag or anything.
No.
Not looking in the bag, because otherwise they would have seen a bag of guns. But maybe in this police station, they're just like, oh, it's a bag of guns. So I guess it's par for the course. But and the one that I thought about a lot was, what was Gary Oldman's plan for murdering a child in the men's bathroom of a very public place? Yeah,
with no lookout, with nothing. I mean, her plan is also a little confusing to me as well.
But she's a child. Although I guess he's sneaked to the dome, so.
Yeah, on his magic pills.
Yeah, exactly.
There's plenty of things to criticize about this movie. It seems like it might be trying to be a little bit more than an action movie at times, but it doesn't seem to try to do too much. And I mean, there are things that are genuinely funny, and then there are things that I think are just some examples of good filmmaking. So I'll take it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is a really well-made action movie that has a very simple idea, like the actual quote unquote, you know, idea underneath the action of the movie. But the action's really well done, like you said. Cinematography is awesome. There's some really good wide-angle cinematography in this movie. And seeing it in the theater like really helps it out, because especially right off the bat, all those really wide-angle shots through New York and then into Old Tony's restaurant, and then those that close-up heavy scene. Well, it's all extreme close-ups for the whole scene. That whole sequence really worked well, and a lot of the really wide angle anamorphic shots throughout the movie just look so much better when they're gigantic, because it was made to be seen in a gigantic format, you know?
Yeah, no, I was very immediately interested in the style of this movie once we got that Streetway one you're talking about, where we go into the Little Italy sign and right into the building. I don't know, it just seemed like that would be a way to start more movies, and I haven't seen it that many times, and it was very good.
Yeah, exactly.
anamorphic shots are you talking about?
Well, just in general, like there's a real like, when in doubt, they're shooting on a pretty wide lens in this movie. Like, especially you can see it in the first action sequence, because it's where it first sort of popped into my head, where you know, they're clearly shooting anamorphic on pretty wide lenses, because as we've talked about before, like the straight lines of like walls or whatever off to the side of the frame are kind of like distorted a little bit, they're bent.
Yeah.
Which is what wide angle lenses do, and which is what anamorphic does, and combine the two and you get it doubled. So all of that, it makes it very apparent. And you see a lot of really good close-ups in this movie that are shot on a wide angle, specifically in the apartment, or not the apartment, the hallway to Leon's apartment towards the beginning. Like, you'll get a close-up of, I remember one of Matilda's dad before he's dead, where he's just standing in the hallway. I think he's talking to Gary Oldman and his right-hand man. And it just look like the close-up is on his face, and the hallway behind him looks so big because the lens is so wide. Like, and it doesn't seem like they had a lot of money for this movie, and it seems like they just wanted to make it seem as grand as possible on a budget, and I think they succeeded. Yeah,
it's at $16 million for an action movie in New York. I mean, that's not going to get you too far, but
yeah, and especially when you think of like some of the action sequences that they pull off in this movie probably took the vast majority of the money. Like, I think they spent almost no money on set design in this movie because there is nothing on any wall in this movie, pretty much, you know, like I think they put all of it into a camera package and the action sequence.
I just didn't think it really looked cheap. I mean, it looks bare the way you're describing it, but you know, even the explosions and the big action scenes, there's not really stuff there besides extremely questionable police work. Yeah. And someone yelling, "Send in the cats," which I expected to be a lot more adorable than it was. I don't think that brings it down in any way.
Yeah. No, for sure.
Yeah. How about Gene Reno himself?
He will always have a special place in my heart as somebody that came of age watching movies in the 90s, specifically action movies, and he just seemed to be in a lot of them. And he's just, I don't know, he's got a charisma about him that is just very likable. And, you know, even at times when he's clearly not given the best performance you've ever seen in your life, there's just always been something very likable about him to me in this movie and other movies.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is, because
like he's good in Godzilla, and like I think that's the first positive thing anybody's ever said about that movie.
Yeah, and not a bad soundtrack though. Rage, Green Day, Jamiroquai, anyway,
Wallflowers.
There you go. He doesn't strike me as an action person every time I see him again. And I think you're right. He's good in those movies. And I don't know if it's something necessarily likable, as though you want to hang out with him, but I always thought there was something kind of very real and immediate about him. And he does play a somewhat counterintuitive role for an action hero or an action character in this. Yeah. Maybe not hero. But I really like him in this, and I like him in general. And I thought he did a pretty good balance of making Leon not seem too stupid. Yeah. I really thought that was going to be a lot of where this movie went, especially when she started teaching him to read. And he kind of has a little bit of childlike goofiness when he's watching the movies and they're doing their impressions and stuff. But yeah. I think he's good. I think he's really good overall. And I think that that dynamic's there for a reason. I mean, these are polar opposite characters. You know, she's young, but she's kind of worldly, and she's seen all these things that someone her age definitely shouldn't have to have seen, even before seeing her parents get murdered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kind of comes out right and says it this time that he's old enough, but now he needs to grow up. I think that's a kind of a bit of a trope we've seen a lot, but I thought it was handled pretty well in this. There's a couple of missteps, but I thought overall for something we've seen so many times, I thought it was performed pretty well.
Yeah, I would agree. And he doesn't look like the characteristic action star either, which counts for me, you know, like, and yeah, especially since he talks a lot about, you know, his job is based on him being smart. And so he, you know, he wouldn't have to be this like Arnold Schwarzenegger 1985 sort of guy, you know, like, he's able to be a normal dude that just does some sit-ups in the morning, you know?
You don't need to do weights, just do a lot of sit-ups.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I like that, and especially the time when this movie comes out, we're coming out of a period of, you know, the 80s machismo superstar. So so that sort of probably would have been even more pleasant to me in the 90s. Had I seen it when it first came out?
Yeah, and speaking of the 90s, something I knew and kind of slipped my mind and while reading about this movie and the time period it would have been released in. This is after Waco and Ruby Ridge, which is another, I think, more forgotten than the Waco siege, but equally terrible and it's just these examples of, it was the DEA and the ATF who were kind of going at it pretty cowboy style and, you know, using excessive force and, you know, always rumors of being corrupt in a lot of ways. So for him to, for Gary Oldman's character to be working for the DEA and to be running the unit the way he does, I mean, I can't imagine that anyone in real life is quite as reckless as some of the things we see in this movie. But that's just something kind of time sensitive that I think would ring true in the 90s. I mean, there's always government corruption. And I think in the last few years, we've seen definite examples of excessive force by police units.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That was something I think would be pretty timely in the mid 90s with Ruby Ridge only being 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's examples that are right on. I mean, there's quotes taken out of testimony in this movie, you know, so they tell them we were just doing our job and things like that. Those come from, you know, court documents. So I thought that was a nice touch to get something really timely in there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I love the cop who's supposed to be defending, protecting the crime scene.
Oh, yeah. I'm just visiting people in 6J. Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, I'll turn around again.
Yeah.
Give pieces of my uniform to this girl I kind of just met, it seems like.
Yeah, exactly. So where to now? Napo?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we've talked about their personalities a little bit and the way that they contrast, but we didn't really talk too much about their relationship to each other.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think it's a pretty central part of the movie.
I think it is the central part of the movie.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. I mean, Natalie Portman, good child actor.
Oh, yeah. I think she's very good in this.
Yeah, for sure. And they're good together, as we discussed. And yeah, their relationship is... what's the word? It's intriguing at times. At times, it's terrifying.
You're just picking your words very carefully.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, in general, like, it's a pretty standard adult to child, like, that are not related by blood, sort of familial relationship. They just are two outcasts of sorts that sort of start to form their own family together. And as we've said, most of this, like everything in this movie has been done before and done again since, but it still does it well, you know, like both of them are just good enough performers that that it works, you know.
Yeah, the hitman with the heart of gold kind of thing, it's certainly not original to this idea, this movie here. Mm-hmm. But as you said, I mean, everything's been done before at some point, so it's just about doing it doing it in some kind of a new way and doing it well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good, and I think that.
I guess him training her to be a hit person, I suppose would be the term, or a cleaner. That I feel like was kind of new. Seeing a child being groomed to be a professional killer. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to, you know, one of the seeming contradictions in Leon's character, right? I mean, he does all this work. He kills all these people who he's never met. I mean, he has rules about no women and no children, but he seems to have very little remorse about killing these people who he knows nothing about. And as we learn later in the movie, he probably has done work for Stansfield at some point just because...
Yeah.
We hear him mention to Tony that he uses his guys sometimes. And so, quickly we get into, you know, kind of a pretty big contradiction about where his morality is and what his code really is. And so just to see him show his soft side by choosing to save her life. I mean, he has nothing to gain from letting her in the door. The only likely outcome is that it attracts attention to him, right?
Yeah.
Which is something he goes on to, we learn that is something he actively tries to avoid for obvious reasons. Then to see him, as you said, train her and kind of bring her into this lifestyle is something interesting, but it's hard for him to really say it's not right for her or it's not the right thing to do considering it's what he does professionally.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of the thing that he is thinking about it in his head, what he's allowing her to participate in this world, and even encouraging her to participate in this world just by the act of teaching her,
Yeah.
Is that, like, she's already seen so much. It's like she's, her life is kind of so fucked up that maybe this is kind of steering her on the right path of fucked upness, you know, like
being good at it instead of going out there and trying it with no talent.
Exactly. Yeah. Because she's still a kid and she's still going to be overly confident in whatever she gets in her head that she should attempt. And it seems like she's going to attempt it regardless of what Leon does. So by teaching her to murder people, she's doing he's definitely doing her a service. You know?
Yeah, teach her to be a bit more meticulous than taking a gun and firing it out a window randomly.
Oh my God, that's insane. That's so crazy. How are there no repercussions to that?
Oh, this whole movie is how are there no repercussions
to
that?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
that's the one that really just screams it to me, because it's downtown New York. They go back to that apartment later. It's, I don't know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, even when there's attempts to have repercussions in this movie, when Gary Oldman's back at that scene after she snuck in to get her bunny rabbit, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, those two other cops seem to be holding him accountable for what happened, you know, not knowing the extent of the corruption, but, you know, shooting a kid in the back and, you know, these people who, you know, the rest of the family aren't really criminals that we know of except for the father. He's just having none of it. Like, he walks away. He literally walks away from that. So I imagine something like that happened outside that window, too. So it's pretty lawless out there, I think.
I don't have time for this. I just walk away, and then that just is the end of the conversation. It's just, that's how you end any investigation into what you, whatever guns you've been shooting off. Just yell, I don't have time for this, and walk away briskly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm justifying it with he's a federal agent, and those were probably New York police, so... he kind of would have jurisdiction, but it seemed pretty wonky. But that's on my list of 500 insane things of police work on this movie. So
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. And so I knew that this movie was about this young girl and having some kind of relationship with this older man. I didn't realize how much she kind of leans into it, you know, saying that she wants to have sex with him, saying that she loves him all these times in a way that does not seem, you know, like family love or platonic love.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, I believe it's the dinner scene and then the scene where she says that she wants to have sex with him. Like, those are not in the short version from what I recall. So, but the even seeing the short version, it's still kind of there's still enough in the movie that you're just like, oh, I don't feel right about this, you know, like and yeah, the extended version really does lean into that stuff a lot more, and I still don't really know how to deal with it. I think it's just kind of like it kind of makes sense that a kid would kind of like fall for the person that saved her life in that sort of way, but it's still gross, you know, like it's still something that is uncomfortable to see in a movie.
Yeah, and how do you feel of his level of encouraging it or letting it happen lies? Like, how much of this is he responsible for? Because I think, as you said, this person literally saved your life. I mean, and you're a confused girl, young girl, like, you know, just getting to that certain part, that certain age. So how do you feel, what's he responsible for?
I don't know, because, like, if he is too, if he's too forcefully, like, pushing her away, like, kicking her out or whatever, then he's kind of killing her. And I think in his head he's kind of seeing it as the way that, like, just a young person can just sort of fall for an adult for... just for them being close to them, you know? And I think he's just sort of seeing it as like, I'm just the only person in her life. And she's sort of starting to have, feelings in general. And this would be applied to whoever was the nicest to her at that time. And it just so happens to be me right now, you know? So I think that's it. I don't know.
Okay. What do you feel about him buying her the dress?
Again, this movie, the problem with this movie, I'm trying to make it okay for me to like this movie, but the problem with this movie is that it was directed by somebody that married a 16-year-old, so we have to see it through that lens. And through that lens, it's really creepy and really gross. And the dress-up portion of the movie is really uncomfortable because of it.
Oh, yeah. The Marilyn Monroe. And,
yeah, exactly. Not even that they're playing dress-up. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's the choices. The choices of celebrities. Madonna singing Like a Virgin. The Marilyn Monroe Happy Birthday. It's just
sexy Charlie Chaplin.
Okay, you said that, not me. That is not a James does not speak for both MacGuffin men.
Hey, our name's in this movie.
I know. But yeah, it's just, and I was saying to the person I saw this movie with, because I hadn't seen it in so long, when the movie was over, like I said to her, about 5 minutes into this movie, I just immediately got like acid flashbacks of all the gross pervy shit that happens in this movie, and just got so uncomfortable waiting for it to happen. So yeah, I don't know. There's no defense for it. It goes too far in some places for sure. Yeah,
and I think part of it is what we were speaking to before about him kind of being childlike in so many ways and her being an adult. I mean, her chugging champagne versus him, you know, sipping his milk all the time. She smokes, he doesn't. For him to, you know, when it comes time to play dress up, he picks a cowboy, which is such a kind of young boy, you know, figure to emulate, whereas she picks sex icons from different eras, and I am including Charlie Chaplin in that. you know, we kind of get more of that, the juxtaposition between their
exactly.
mentalities, right?
Yeah, and going with the Leon is sort of a young boy in an adult's body sort of idea. He seems to be most attached to movies that he would have seen as a child, like Gene Kelly musicals and John Wayne westerns, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that also helps to further that idea.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of cinema in this movie. I mean, he's in a movie theater. It's one of the very few things we know about him. He likes his plant, and he likes old movies.
Yeah.
The use of the term MacGuffin.
Yeah.
You know, this just... It's clearly made by someone who likes movies, but those are the kinds of people who make movies. I understand that much, but you know, just a couple of little of those in cinema kind of things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's pretty rare that seeing a scene take place in a movie theater is gonna bum me out. You know, like
because
that's just speaking to the one thing I want to do all the time. You know?
Well, I did enjoy his look back at the other person in the theater. Like, are you seeing this?
Yeah.
Are you seeing how good this movie is?
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting reaction for what at that time was already a 40-year-old movie.
Yeah. The internet didn't exist. You know, you couldn't download a movie like that yet.
That's true. I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, you could get it on VHS, but anyway, that's a whole other thing. Yeah. So let's talk about 1990s Gary Oldman, because, man, I miss 1990s Gary Oldman.
Yeah, you know what? He's still great, but...
He's still great, but... but he's not 1990s Gary Oldman great.
No, and Bring Me Everybody is so wonderful.
Oh, it's so good. And, like, I mean, just so many things throughout the movie. Yeah, like you said, him yelling everyone and him talking about Mozart, and I didn't even write them down because they're just every one of his lines is delivered with such aplomb. And when there, it seems to be like he's doing some really, just like Luc Besson, the director of this film, when they're in that building where Matilda's bringing the bag of guns to murder the people that killed her family. He just seems to be like walking around and improvising, and and it's all so good. Like him playing the slap hands game with one of his henchmen, I suppose. Like him almost bumping into a guy, an extra that just happens to be walking around, and the extra apologizing to him. Like,
yeah,
it's all money, you know.
Yeah.
Like it's
yeah, it's and great. I understand all his Mozart speeches. There's a new one every take. Like he just takes one of his scenery chewing pills and just gives it a go every time.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm still very much a fan of Gary Oldman. Like it seems to be like Commissioner Gordon in Batman Begins is a real line in his career. Not that he didn't ever play anything a bit more subtle before 2005, but he really sort of started to play these quieter, more reasonable adult roles. Like when he was cast in that role and when that movie came out, it was like, wow, I can't believe Gary Oldman is doing this. He's just playing a normal middle-aged man, you know?
And it's the guy from True Romance, right?
Yeah, exactly. He played Drexel the Killer Pimp. And
we get a little mini Drexel in this movie too.
Yeah, a little bit.
His dreadlocked little assistant there.
Yeah, exactly. And he eventually got nominated for an Oscar for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which is like the quietest performance that has ever performed, you know? And he's very good in all of those movies, and he's still very good in everything, but man, scenery chewing Gary Oldman.
Yeah. Oh, he really goes for it.
Yeah. I love him. He's still like the only thing I like about The Fifth Element is him playing the same character in a much worse movie.
Well, it's funny to look at these movies together. This seemed to really just be something to fill his time before he could get to his magnum opus that was The Fifth Element. And by him, I mean Luc Besson.
I would argue it's Gary Oldman's magnum opus as well.
Right, but it seems is looked on a lot more favorably than The Fifth Element is at this point.
Yeah, as it should be, because The Fifth Element's a piece of shit.
And this isn't.
Exactly.
His bathroom reveal is great.
Oh, so good. It's so good.
I thought this movie was going to take a big turn when she was shooting what might be the president with the rifle off the roof.
Yeah, just unnamed politician. You know? And it can't be the president because the gathering is too small. But I would imagine it's some sort of municipal politician.
And giant douchebag.
Well, yeah, of course. He's a politician. I thought it was implied.
How'd you like the music in this movie?
There are parts where it's good and parts where it's terrible. Like I really like the whole leading up to the attack on Matilda's apartment at the beginning of the movie. All of that setup is really well done, where it's just that long take of all the guys walking through the hallway.
Yeah.
Ending with Gary Oldman and
guns out already.
Yeah, exactly. And then Gary Oldman takes one of his, as you said, it's scenery chewing pills. And the music's really good in that portion.
Mm-hmm.
And it really. It goes up and down throughout the movie, and the only way ending with that terrible Sting song is forgivable to me is that Nas sampled it in a song I actually really like, so it reminds me more of a good song than it does of the actual song that is playing. I don't know. It's really up and down.
Okay, well, you have been fooled, because that Sting song is a hot pile of garbage.
It's a terrible song. Okay. But when Nas is rapping over it, over a beat that samples it, it's much better.
Right. Yeah, I really... I think I feel generally the same way. I mean, it's just the missteps in the music stand out to me a lot more than where it is good.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, some of it, especially when they first meet each other, or not meet each other, but are spending time together after Matilda's family, some of that's a little heavy handed. And I understand that that's a very, emotional moment with their family having just been killed. Mm-hmm. I do get that, but I thought some of that was a little much, and, you know, even Natalie Portman saying that she's dead on the phone with the school who calls her house.
Yeah.
That was a little heavy for me too, but yeah, I think some of the accordion and little jaunty banjo moments and stuff, some of those musical cues I thought, this movie could do without.
But. Yeah, general idea. If you're using accordion in your film score, you can do without it.
Yeah, unless it's inside Old Tony's restaurant or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or you're Johnny Greenwood, and then you can probably make it work and terrify me with it. But.
And I didn't realize that Old Tony and in late era Bob Odenkirk look more similar than I ever thought they would.
That's funny. I don't even know that we're in late era Bob Odenkirk yet. I feel like that's still to come.
I feel like
we're getting there, but
average age expectancy puts him on the wrong side of half.
Okay. Fair enough. I wanted to talk about how the movie depicts loneliness, because that's the thing I enjoy the most about this movie, I would say.
After Gary Oldman.
Yeah. I mean, as far as it being like a movie that to think about, you know, and there's not much to think about with Gary Oldman. It's just like pure glee nonstop when he's on screen.
It affects your heart more than your brain.
But the way that the movie shows Leon's loneliness and Matilda's loneliness, I find very interesting and very well crafted. Specifically, there's a shot where, as you said, Matilda's talking to the school that she has been skipping out on. They've called in to check up on her and say that, you know, they're not going to refund her tuition. And as you said, she says she's dead. That scene is all done in sort of one take, and she has literally, she's just run away from her family as, after her sister punched her a couple times for turning on Transformers. And then she picks up the phone. And so we see that scene starts in a wide shot of her sitting on the bed. And as the phone call progresses, it's a slow zoom into her face, right? And so we have this really nice wide shot of her initially, and then it sort of ends up being just her face, right? And everything in the background is now blurry because as you zoom in, the depth of field gets more shallow. And so she is just kind of alone, right? Like her parents, her family is about to be murdered, you know? So that's another key aspect that, having already seen the movie, it helps out as you see her get to just pure loneliness. And, there's a callback to that in a sense when Leon does eventually decide to keep Matilda along or around later on, or shortly after this, where they're walking on the street and they're on a very long lens. So they're like the only thing in focus and everything else is just blurred out. But, you know, there's cars going by, there's pedestrians walking around. I mean, like, it doesn't even make sense that they're walking where they are because they're clearly in the middle of a street and there are no cars. But it's just like they're the only things in focus and they are together, you know. And I thought that was a really nice pairing of a couple of shots. And in general, I feel like the way that this movie depicts Leon's loneliness specifically at the beginning, because it just focuses more on him, is really good. You know?
Yeah. What did you like about him alone?
Just the way that it's not like he doesn't seem unhappy. He never really seems unhappy. You know, I like that. I like seeing a character that is, I suppose, alone, but not lonely, you know? And somebody that wakes up every day, does the same thing every day, wears the same outfit every day, has probably had the same haircut for decades, you know, like, I enjoy that, you know, just because that also kind of describes my life, you know. I wake up, I go to the movie theater, and I wear the same clothes as I was wearing yesterday, you know, and we'll wear the same, a different version of the same outfit the next day, you know. And he never seems to be sad about it. And I like that. I like that it's okay for him to exist in this world. And obviously the movie seems to be pointing towards that he is missing out on something. But I don't think Leon is sad about it at the beginning. And I like that. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of solitary life thing usually is followed by some pretty, like, mixed in with some alcoholism or, you know, crying yourself to sleep or something else. And you don't get that. And I think it's kind of right on the line there. You know, he seems to be having fun at the movie. Sleeping with your shades on in a chair, I think, is supposed to definitely evoke some negative emotions, though, don't you?
Yeah, that's true. But it's also, I mean, he's in a profession where maybe he should sleep in a chair with his sunglasses on.
That's true.
But it, just in general, the way that the movie depicts his day-to-day loneliness, obviously there are some sad elements in that because he seems to be in danger of being murdered at any moment of the day, you know?
Yeah.
But outside of that, it seems like he likes his life all right, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree. I enjoy that too. And I thought it was played pretty delicately, and just very straightforward. And, you know, there's just some contentment about the way he goes about his day and cleaning his plant and, you know, how he's like his plant. He just always happy, no questions, you know. I do like that. So that's, I mean, I'm just thinking about what this movie is then trying to say. I mean, because his growth is, you know, illustrated, I think, very early on with the moment where he opens the door. I mean, opens the door for Matilda in the very literal sense this time, you know, in saving her life.
And Natalie Portman is great in that scene, by the
Yeah, no, that's she's good there for, yeah. For sure. How do you like the way that they shot that? I mean, not showing the door open, but showing her just kind of getting the light and smiling.
Yeah, I liked it a lot because, I mean, there's two shots that, you know, that shot and another shot later in the movie tie into each other where Matilda's, the crux of her character at that point of the movie is to convince a closed door to open up for her, you know? Yeah. And Leon is that closed door. He, you know, it's his apartment. It's representative of him. And then later on in the movie, right before Leon dies, he is walking towards an open door, right? Like he has turned himself into somebody that will open a closed door occasionally to somebody that is now, you know, an open door, like willing to have people come into his life or love or whatever into his life. And that's the one thing I think is really nice and really subtle about this movie that is a very, you know, it's only done in two shots, but is a nice progression. Like Matilda has to convince this closed door to open up. And then he finally admits that he is an open door when he says that he loves her. And
and
then he's walking towards that literal open door.
Yeah, is a person who will walk through those doors, not just open them. Like,
exactly.
Having opened it allowed him to, it was kind of step one. And then the connection he's made with Matilda allows him to, you know, kind of put himself out there in a very literal sense, walk into that light again.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've talked about just the way that we kind of enjoyed that he looks somewhat content with his loneliness, or I mean his solitude, I'll say. But you would say the message of this movie is still pretty clear, and it's about connecting. It's about setting down roots, as they say, with the plant.
Yes. Yes, I would agree.
Was the plant a little much for you?
Oh, yeah. But it reminded me of Nightcrawler, so it gets points for that, even though, you know, Nightcrawler was still almost 20 years away from existing, but still.
Yeah. Yeah.
The plant is too much. I'm curious to know if you think the same.
I think, especially when he says, the plant's like me, I think that's...
Exactly. Anytime you're pointing to an object and saying that it is, and then having a character say that it is like them, yeah, that's probably too much.
When it's already quite clear what we're going for with this one. And again, this is...
That's a Gary Oldman thing to do. That's not a Leon thing to do.
Yeah. And I thought one of the funnier missteps in this movie is that plant would die in the area she planted it outdoors.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Yeah, like it would. I mean, it's New York or it's Jersey. I was never quite clear because. Yeah.
Well, I mean, she takes the train to a tiny island that I believe, or tram to a tiny island that I believe was still mostly deserted. But you know.
Whatever. Yeah. I understand. It's like a Chinese evergreen or something that in Northern U.S., whichever state it happens to be, it's not going to live out. It's not going to survive outdoors. So,
well, I mean, being a youth is all about learning new things. And now she's learning that the plant representative of the only person she's ever loved is dying, is going to die.
She sure did a lot of growing up in this movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Life and immediately after.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, now I get why she was watching Transformers.
Exactly. Is life always this hard? Or just when you're a kid? Yeah, it's always this hard. That evergreen's always going to die.
That guy who gave you that advice, dead.
Yeah.
The plant representing him very clunkily, dead.
You have to listen to that Sting song. Terrible.
You want to leave on the Sting song note?
We're definitely not going to play it, but we'll leave on it. Okay. So thanks for listening to the McGuffman. Be sure to check back next week when we'll be talking about pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping. And we'll be back for that. Sorry?
Did it go in?
Did it go in? Yeah, yes, it went. All right, later.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.